Good afternoon to everyone. Thank you for joining me for today's COVID-19 daily update. I first want to greet Dr. Nate Smith, our Secretary of Health, for joining us today. And then I also want to remark at the beginning that I had occasion earlier this morning to visit with Mark Pryor, former Senator Mark Pryor, about his dad and mom who tested positive for COVID-19. And Senator David Pryor remains in the hospital. And I visited with Mark about the family, and delighted that Barbara is back home. But our prayers go with the Pryor family. And, you know, it just illustrates that no one is immune from the virus. We can all be careful, but you can't be too careful, and that it can happen. And I think about the Pryor family. It's a well-known family in Arkansas, and whenever it touches them, it touches us all. But that leads me also to the conversation about masks. And while there is a debate about, how do you accomplish encouraging and getting people to wear masks, what we are in total agreement on is that mask is the one tool that we have to reduce the spread of the virus, to be able to give ourselves the ability to be out and to move in public without spreading the virus. And so the mask is something that we want to continue to impress upon our Kansans that will make a difference for us. And if you look at the next 2 weeks, as you know, last week we extended the start date for schools in Arkansas. And that gives us an opportunity to get our cases down, to reduce the spread in our community. And whenever we do that, we know that we can send our children and start back to school in a way that is safer for everyone. So all of Arkansas should sense the urgency, the importance of wearing a mask, of socially distancing, and doing our responsibility to lower the risk of the spread of that virus. And so with that, let's look at the cases that we had over the weekend. Just to refresh ourselves, on Friday we were up 751 cases, Saturday 1,061, Sunday we were up 503 cases. And that gave us yesterday a total of 28,367 cases in Arkansas. In the last 24 hours, we add an additional 572 cases. That brings us to 28,939. Of the 572 cases that we have 77 in Pulaski County, which is the number one county in terms of new cases. 53 in Washington County. We have 40 in Sebastian County. We have 25 in Pope County, 23 in Benton County, 23 in Mississippi County. We have 22 in Crittenden County, and 20 in Craighead County, and 20 in Jefferson County. The rest are lower than 20. And the reason I went through those numbers is because it shows that the number of new cases that we have are really largely spread across the state in multiple counties, even though the largest concentration is one in our population base here in Pulaski County. In terms of hospitalizations, we've increased 19 hospitalizations. I hope that Dr. Smith will explain that some of these are in the Arkansas State Hospital. But that brings us total hospitalizations to 439. We have two additional deaths that brings us to 323. And if we look at this from a testing standpoint, we've accomplished 5,253 tests last 24 hours, and that was a 7.5% overall cumulative positivity rate. If we go to our slides, you can see the graph that shows where we are in terms of our number of cases, here being about 500 80-some for the last 24 hours, 572. And then the next one is our rolling average. And you can see where we've got to reduce that trend line even from where we are right now. And by the way, let me emphasize that even though you had a 50% reduction in cases from 1,000 down to 500 and some, let me tell you, that is way too high. We have to do more than that. We have to get those cases down below that. And that is our objective. We're not happy with where that is. We've got more work to do. And then the number of currently hospitalized, you see, and we're going to spend a little more time on this, but you can see that's increased closer to the 450 range, 439. And then I want to go through regional data today, which gives us a sense, particularly in hospitalizations, as to where we are across the state by different regions. And these are public health regions. We're starting in the northeast region of the state. And these are the number of currently hospitalized. And as I've mentioned, this is what we want to watch. We've got to make sure we have adequate hospital capacity. And you can see in the northeast region, you had a peak of 40. It is down closer to 30. And that gives us some comfort level. Next, we see the northwest region. And this is on sort of a plateau, but it's too high of a plateau. Hopefully we can see that come down as well. I've talked to some of the Northwest Arkansas hospitals, and they have adequate capacity now, but we want to continue to watch that. And then you see the southwest region, and this is at the 40 level, so it's a little bit below that. Again, right now it's flattened out. And then you look at the central region, and this is where it escalated up to over 60, and it's come down some since then, but we want to be able to continue to reduce that number. And then the number of currently hospitalized in the southeast region, in the same way, it's sort of up and down, and that's in the 37 level. And then this is just the combination of all of those together. You can see the trend lines with the hospitalizations that we have. And we watch this again. I want to assure everybody that we have adequate hospital capacity to meet the needs of our citizens, but we don't want to strain the staff. We don't want to put pressure on the alternative or the surgeries that are not absolutely necessary, non-emergent surgeries. We want to be able to continue that in our normal health care. And all of that combined does put pressure on our healthcare systems. We want them to be at full capacity. But at the same time, we want to be able to reduce the pressure from our COVID patients, and that's why we're trying to reduce the number of cases. I think that's, let's see what we have here. And this is a breakdown. I indicated that I wanted to look more closely at where the cases over the weekend are coming from and what parts of the state. And I know this is difficult for everyone to read, but this is the number of new positive cases from July 11th to the 13th, broken down across the state. And you can see from these this graph that the highest concentration is in the population areas. And those are the red is the highest number of new cases, Benton, Washington, Pulaski County, Craighead County, and then, of course, beyond that, they're scattered across the state. 37 in Miller County. You've got 12 in Bradley County, 27 in White County. Go up to Baxter County. There's two. When I was up there, they really weren't having new cases. And so we see two that are there. And so they're really scattered a large part of the state. And these are community cases that you're looking at here, not correctional cases. And that's one of them. Whenever we had 1,000 that one day, about a third of those were correctional cases coming out of Hot Spring County. I believe that's what I wanted to show you today. And before I turn it over to Dr. Smith, I wanted to emphasize again that we want to make sure that we do all we can, whether it is through our encouragement, through the flexibility that we give our local municipalities. And I know that I believe it's 6 or 7 have already enacted ordinances that would mandate the wearing of masks in their communities. That was designed to give flexibility to them when they see a concern of community spread. And many of them have taken advantage of that, and others are considering it now. And so we want to get to the objective of everybody understanding the importance and how that can make a difference as to how we engage in school, how we engage in our fall activities. Dr. Smith.
Thank you, Governor. I'd like to give a little bit more details on the numbers and then also talk a little bit more about masks. As the Governor has mentioned, we've had 572 new cases since yesterday. 3 of them are categorized as being from correctional facilities and 569 from the community. Now, of our cases over the weekend, a large proportion of them, especially on Saturday, were from the Ouachita River unit in Malvern. And over the last 4 days, we've actually had over 500 who have tested positive in that facility. So that was a big part of our case surge over the weekend, and we're going to continue to monitor that situation. Again, individuals can initially test negative, but still be infected, and so we go back and we repeat testing, in 5 days or so to make sure that we've not missed any. We have a total of 28,939 cases. Of those, 6,510 are active cases, and of those, 127 are in a nursing home, 958 in a correctional facility, so we have 5,425 active cases in the community. The governor has mentioned we did have a net increase of 19 currently hospitalized, so our currently hospitalized is 439. I will note that 9 of those are in the Arkansas State Hospital, so obviously that facility does not admit people for care of COVID-19. These were residents there who then were tested positive. We do include the state hospital as a hospital in our counting of currently hospitalized COVID-19 patients, but in terms of testing strategy, we treat them like a long-term care facility, and we do routine testing. And these cases were detected when we did routine testing of those high-risk residents. We have 89 currently on a ventilator. That's an increase of 7 from yesterday. We've had 2 additional deaths, so we're at 323 total deaths from COVID-19. We had 515 who recovered from yesterday, so our total is 22,106 that have recovered. In terms of our testing, we tested 5,254 yesterday. Again, remember, Mondays tend to be a little lower after a weekend. On Saturday and Sunday, we each had over 6,000 each of those days. And the public health lab has consistently been testing over 1,000 for at least the last 5 days. And yesterday, the public health lab tested 1,404 individuals. I mentioned that I would talk a little bit more about masks. Specifically, what I would like to talk about is what I've heard some people say, or apparently on social media as well, that masks don't work. They don't protect you against COVID-19. And some of these surgical masks, if you read it, it will say, does not protect against COVID-19. And I want to help people to understand what that means and why it's still important that we wear masks. A hammer doesn't work very well as a screwdriver, but it works pretty well as a hammer. These surgical masks or cloth masks, they are designed for source control. If you think about, you call it a surgeon's mask, a surgeon wears it to keep their germs from getting in your surgical wound, and they work very well for that. And so if everyone is wearing a mask, we're keeping our respiratory secretions to ourselves, preventing them from becoming airborne, and they work very well for protecting groups of people, populations against COVID-19. Now, are they designed to protect you individually from someone else with COVID-19? No, because the air comes in around. They're not an N95 mask, and so that's why it says on the packaging, you know, this does not protect against COVID-19. It doesn't protect the individual wearing it, although more recent evidence suggests it does offer some level of protection. But they're really designed for source control. If we can get everyone to wear those masks, then we're all protected because we basically keep our respiratory droplets to ourselves rather than letting them get airborne. So if you walk into a restaurant or into some other setting, and if everyone is wearing their mask, then we're not aerosolizing COVID-19, and it's relatively safe for those there. I would still recommend keeping a 6-foot distance, but it's safe. If you go in and you've got a couple people who aren't wearing their masks, and if they happen to be the ones who are infected, even if they're asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic, not showing any signs or symptoms, well, they're aerosolizing their virus, and then our masks offer some protection, but it still puts us all at risk. And so it is true that these masks, surgical masks, cloth masks, are not designed to protect the person wearing it. They're not highly protective, but they're very effective in keeping respiratory droplets from becoming aerosolized and infecting others. So again, it is not true that masks do not protect against COVID-19 in a group or population level. That message there is to say you can't depend on them to protect you if no one else is wearing a mask. With that, I'll go ahead and turn it back over to the governor.
With that, we'll turn it over to questions.
Continuing on this, you've repeatedly urged people to wear masks. You've said that they're helpful. Obviously, Dr. Smith's comments just there that they're about helping other people. In your view, what's stopping that percentage of the population that just isn't wearing masks from doing so? And if you're not going to issue a mask order, how do you get those people to change their behavior?
And that's really the fundamental question. How do you get people to change their behavior to wear a mask and to protect others? And we all want to get to the objective of increasing mask usage out there. You know, one tool is, well, let's do a mandate. And the other tool is, let's concentrate on education and encouragement and with enforcement in the restaurants and other areas that those are required. Now, let's just look at a couple of counties. It was noted that in Northwest Arkansas, we've had some success. Let's look at Benton County. Benton County was one of the counties that was going up like a skyrocket, and now you see them coming back down at a very more controlled level. There is not any city or any mandate in Benton County, but it was through education that they responded to that. And now you contrast that to Pulaski County. You've had a mandate here in Pulaski County in the city of Little Rock, and yet you see the cases going up. To me, it is about behavior and how do you get people to respond to that. We're all trying different tools. We're trying to get there. And I think as long as we work together as a team, we're going to continue to have success, and Arkansans are going to respond to that. Yes.
So over the weekend, you tweeted that these record number of new cases may be the result of the July 4th celebrations. However, Mr. Smith just said that it's from the Washita River unit in Malvern. Which is it?
Well, even if you take one-third of the cases out of the Malvern area for the correctional facility there, you still have an increase of a couple of hundred on Saturday. And so, you know, where do those cases come from? As you noted very appropriately, I said May, and that's what we're continuing to watch. We haven't done all the contact tracing there. And so we'll continue to learn and observe from it. But there was some increase in the community spread for that one day in addition to what we saw in the correctional facilities.
So there's no specific data that says that it is because of the July 4th celebrations as of right now?
Dr. Smith?
This past weekend is about when you would expect to see the beginning of a rise related to activities that occurred the weekend before, because the average incubation period is 5 or 6 days. Then there may be a few days delay in getting test results back. It's not possible for us to ascertain at this moment how many of those were related, but it probably was a contributor. We also have several hundred of those were due to the correctional facility, which I can't relate to July 4th in any way.
Do you have any new data on how many cases have been linked to bars, restaurants, churches, gyms, those kinds of things?
We are running that analysis twice a week. The numbers that are being reported in our case investigations are still relatively small, although we of course have specific, we complement that with cluster investigations. When we've got a cluster related to a specific bar or a specific restaurant, then that's informative, and we'll act on that as well. At this point, it doesn't look like we're having that as a major driver, although I would say, just increased mobility, people coming in contact with each other, especially if they're not cautious about physical distancing and not wearing masks, that all will contribute to an increased COVID-19 transmission. But we're not seeing those as major drivers. So far, we're seeing, clusters that we act upon.
Yes.
So after Mayor Scott put in the ordinance, the mask ordinance in place, I did talk to a number of people, and a lot of them had the attitude of like, well, if it's not coming from our governor, that's not something I'm going to do because there's no way to like enforce it. So is that not something that you see in our future, even after the numbers from this weekend?
We will continue to look at tools that work, and we will see what is the best way to accomplish the objective of encouraging people to wear a mask as well as reducing the cases. So as you look at the future, if our cases stay flat or go down, then we won't have to utilize other tools. If you see our cases go up, you'll see us scrambling for new tools. Just like they have in other states. And so, and there's limited numbers that we can grab to utilize. So certainly that's why everyone should say we don't want to have to put more restrictions on. We don't want to have to slow anything down. And the answer is if you don't want that to happen, then we've got to continue to be disciplined, social distance, wear a mask. Leslie.
I have a question for you. When schools open, and I guess at this level, if we don't get any more cases, schools will continue to open. If we're on a plateau now, if we stay at around 500 a day.
Well, schools are going to open, as we indicated, was it the week of August 24th? So we delayed the opening of schools, but schools, everyone is planning on opening that time frame. Once they open, if you've got incidences of positive cases, then the question is, how do you respond to that? And one of the things that we measure is the extent of community spread as to how you respond to that. But school is opening on August 24th that week.
So my question is, will the schools be in charge of contact tracing? Or is that another burden on the Department of Health?
That will be, whenever you have a positive case, then obviously you have immediate isolation, quarantine. But yes, that Department of Health is notified, and they assure that the right contact tracing is accomplished.
So it won't be the school's responsibility to do contact tracing except to send someone home?
They have to take immediate action. They would, if when they know of a positive case, obviously they don't let them in the school facility. So they take some immediate action. But ultimately, the broader contact tracing would be supervised by the Department of Health.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
So if you were more or less linking an increase of cases to the July 4th celebration, why haven't you linked an increase of cases to the Black Lives Matter protests in the state?
Well, you know, we look at the data, and Dr. Smith, is that inquired on the protest? Why don't you answer that?
The protests and the rallies, et cetera, they're a little bit more difficult to link to because they didn't occur all on the same date. You know, July 4th, we've got a fixed period of time, and then we can look. It's a little harder when you've got things that occurred at different times and different places. So we ask. We ask whether you've been involved in a protest or demonstration or rally, and we have not found very many who have been. And some of these are of variable sizes. You know, some of them are pretty small. And, you know, then there's a lot of different features to them. Some wore masks and, you know, were physically distanced, and others were not. But we ask about that. We follow up on that. It's also a little bit different than, say, trying to link it to a bar or a restaurant, because you know where that bar is, you know where that restaurant, you can go to there, see if there's ongoing issues, and you can correct those. You know, the protest or rally, it's happened, and it's over, and there's nothing there to fix. It's just, you know, just noting it.
Yes, ma'am. Then we'll go remotely.
Is the state taking any further efforts to improve the supply chain of testing or the turnaround?
Great question, and the answer is yes. I look at, actually, was there one more? Let's see if there's another at the very end. I think, yeah, here's the one I did want to put up, and I think it's relevant to the question that you're asking. And this is the one we usually show on test results and testing facility type. And, of course, you have the orange, which is the Department of Health at the bottom. It's UAMS is the one at the bottom, and then the white is the Department of Health. And you can see how they've expanded their capacity. And then you see the red are the commercial labs, and whereas that's in early June, it looks like, and late May, they were up at the eighth this level, and they have declined in the number of commercial lab tests that are coming back into our mix. And so that is a concern to me. You're asking, what are we doing about this? I've challenged Dr. Smith and the Department of Health. Is there ways that we can expand, even within the Department of Health, our testing capacity? Because that's one thing we do control. Now, when I say we could control it, we're still dependent upon reagents, we're testing equipment, but if we can build our capacity there, I want to be able to do it. It's a big challenge. They've done enormously increase the number of testing they've done. The commercial labs, I think I'm becoming a singular national voice for utilizing the National Defense Production Act to expand and coordinate our national testing, but that's a message I continue to push. Let's go remotely.
Yes, this is Susanna with Ozarks at Large. I have a question. Over the weekend, the New York Times reported on that internal CDC memo that was given to teams deployed in coronavirus hotspots that said reopening K through 12 schools and universities would be the highest risk for the spread of coronavirus. I'm wondering if you've seen that memo before the New York Times discussed it in its report, and if it gives you any kind of pause going into the fall.
I have not seen the report in terms of the risk associated with returning back to school. I think everybody is very aware that there is, anytime you have people together, if you don't mitigate the risk and you don't provide proper precautions, then certainly that is a risky environment for the spread of the virus, even though we're dealing with younger people. And so that's exactly the reason that we have the plan that's been outlined requires following guidelines that's been issued by the Public Health Department. We're listening to parents and teachers, trying to refine those in the next 30 days that we have before school starts. We'll continue to work on that. And so there's also, you can look at the pediatric reports and others that point out that there's risk if we don't go to school. There's significant risk if we don't begin school, because in many instances, for many children, the school is the safest environment that they can have. Dr. Smith, did you want to elaborate on that?
Yes, I would reiterate what the governor said. I mean, there are some, there are clearly risks associated with any activity that brings people together, and our job as public health, working together with the Department of Education, is to try and minimize those risks, make it as safe as possible for us to do the things that we need to do. With regard to internal memos, in the health department, we have, rich discussions over all these issues with different experts within my staff expressing different opinions, and that's how it should be. We should be looking at things from all angles, and then we come up with a synthesis, and that's our official policy. And similar at CDC, I'm sure there are different people with different ideas they discuss, but whatever comes out as the official position, that's the synthesis of it. I wouldn't want to suppress that kind of dialogue in my agency or in theirs, but just understanding that that at the end we have to make a decision, and that decision will not reflect every perspective that's been articulated.
Another question remotely.
Governor, it's Roly Hoyt with THV 11. You mentioned how you sound like you're a lone voice now asking for national defense.
All right, so can you see if you can speak closer to the mic? You're just breaking up a little bit.
I apologize, sir. I'll try and see you. Hopefully that makes it better. You mentioned how you're disappointed and that you seem to be a lone voice when it comes to the National Defense Production Act. What is your overall disappointment level with the White House and the national response right now, and how tough are they making your job?
Well, I'm just looking at the future, and everybody can see the pressure point on the commercial labs and the fact that you've got large populations in California, Texas, Florida. They're all increasing their testing or trying to. That's created the backlog in the six commercial labs that serve our nation. And so they're stressed. How do you encourage those to expand their capacity, to put more money at risk, investment at risk? And that's where the National Defense Production Act can be a tool that can be used to incentivize increased capacity or mandate increased capacity. And so it has to be managed, and that's a tool that I think is helpful. I believe the White House is looking at that. They haven't said no to it. But I do believe, as you look at the coming months, that that is a matter of some urgency. Another question remotely. I think I heard one more.
This is Governor. Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, this is Patricia Davis with KAIP in Jonesboro. On May 11th, restaurants were allowed to reopen to dine-in customers as long as they required masks and social distancing. Now, according to online ADH reports, health inspectors have witnessed both employees and customers of various restaurants not adhering to those guidelines. One local restaurant manager was even quoted as saying he would not require his customers to wear masks. Now, as far as we have been able to ascertain, he was not cited nor fined, and his business is still open. My question, which is actually two, why issue directives if there are no apparent consequences, and does the ADH intend to enforce your directive?
Thank you for the question, and for those who couldn't hear the question, it relates to restaurants that there's a complaint and there's a review and they're not complying with the public health guidelines for wearing a mask. And we are enforcing that, and there's a couple different tools for it. We actually put in operation not just the public health enforcement team, but also alcoholic beverage control team for ones that they have the right to inspect. And so that's a magnified capability for reviewing their compliance. And I think you can, everybody probably knows examples where action was taken whenever there is a specific complaint. And so I encourage your viewers, your readers to, if they see a violation, they want to report it to the Department of Health, and it will be followed up on. And then secondly, that's a tool for any city that can enact the model ordinance that gives the ability of the restaurant owner to call law enforcement to come in and to enforce the mandate. So there are a number of tools that are out there that we'll continue to use. Yes.
So Arkansas has now had 6 high schools who have had to cancel their football practice due to COVID positive cases. Is that something that you're concerned about going forward with more high schools starting up their sports?
Well, you said there were 6 that had positive cases.
Yes,
that can't
suspend their 6 different high schools in the state.
Correct. I mean, quite frankly, if we start school, it wouldn't surprise me that there's, you know, in the first month, there will be 6 or 7 schools that will have students that test positive. I mean, that's it all depends upon where we will be at that particular time. So the question is not, if it's going to happen, but how do you respond when it does happen? And that's why we're developing the specific plans to address it whenever there is a positive case in a school or associated with it. You work through it. You can shift to virtual learning. You can look at it and say that it's okay just to isolate the one student and go back to school the next day. And so you deal with what we know is going to be inevitable to happen. Dr. Smith, I've been talking a long time.
Yeah, we're watching these situations very carefully because they all contribute to our understanding of what might work and what doesn't work. In many cases, we can identify some lapse that occurred and correct that and help people to be more careful about how they implement the directives. In some cases, it's just a matter of it being intrinsically more risky to bring people together during a time when you have a pandemic. And so we are all learning through this process. In general, any kind of activities that bring people in close contact together, without wearing masks, those are going to be problematic. And those are going to be things that people might consider, minimizing or putting off until after we have less COVID-19 transmission in our communities.
Any final question?
Do we have any update on the situation at the UAMS hospital, or are there any other hospitals in the state that are having capacity issues?
The answer is no. I think it was clarified by UAMS, even the ICU beds, that their capacity limits are not related to COVID. Because they have a lot of other capacity there, and their normal state at UAMS was trying to operate at capacity. That's a good business model. But we're watching it. And so my calls around to both Central Arkansas Hospitals and Northwest Arkansas Hospitals was checking in, what's your status, do you feel comfortable? The answers were very positive, but what is encouraging to me is the systems that we have in place, as it might get tied in one hospital, there's relationships with others that we can continue to make sure that everybody is adequately cared for, both in terms of COVID, but also in terms of the normal needs of the hospital. Dr. Smith, do you want to get a final word there?
Hospital capacity is something we need to continue to watch carefully, especially ICU bed capacity. Ventilators we look like we're doing okay with, but staffed ICU beds, it's always, of course, course, a hospital doesn't want to staff a bunch of ICU beds that they're not going to use. I mean, that wouldn't make any economic sense. And to some extent, they can expand, staff those and open them up as long as they have ventilators and staff to do that with. It's important that we continue to watch that carefully. I think that in some cases, it's not just the COVID patients, it's the other patients, and hospitals, if they are getting up towards capacity, they may need to look at some of the other activities they're doing. We're not going to tell them to not do any elective cases or things like that at this point. All that does is puts the hospital under economic stress, but they are going to have to make some decisions on that if they're creeping up towards those levels. Although we continue to see increases in our number of currently hospitalized, it's not gotten to the point where we're looking to implement any of our contingency models that we put together back in March and April.
With that, thank you, and we will convene again. Thank you.